Andrew Brown, how are we doing?
Good. How are you doing, Chase?
You know, I feel like something big happened this weekend. I just can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, it felt like a long time ago, but, you know, it's just this last weekend.
What was it? As a Cougar fan, I'm trying to push everything out of my memory.
Hey, you got to look forward. Look forward. Past the bad, you know?
Oh, man. Well, coming to you live September 4th, 2019. And we just witnessed yet again another Utah Utes victory over BYU. And, you know, as a Cougar fan, I'm lamenting. Andrew, I'm sure you're on cloud nine right now.
You know, it's just, you know, it's become a regular occurrence, Chase. I'm excited it happened. I'm excited that it went to nine, but I'm ready to move on.
Yeah. To the next game or next season, Holy War?
Next game. Just this season still.
Yeah. Man, I gotta reach out there and say, I bet you guys probably feel somewhat like we fell with Utah State to some degree of, hey, you know, most of the time we get them, we're always winning, and we just have to go out there and prove it versus, oh man, I wonder if we're really going to win or not. That's got to be somewhat the feeling you guys have at this point.
You know, it's easy to say that, and as most Utah fans will say that, but about 10 minutes before kickoff, I read Utah Twitter, and it's a bunch of people saying, man, why do I always feel awful before this game? So no matter what happens, I'm pretty sure Utah fans are going to be a little bit, just a little bit nervous before the BYU game, always.
Yeah. Well, let's jump into it. A whole war is come and gone. Utes have won. What were some of the takeaways from this 30-12 victory?
I feel like it was similar takeaways to what we've seen in past Holy Wars over the last 10 years. Lots of turnovers that changed momentum, changed the game. Penalties were a big part of the game as well. So, yeah, I think that the turnovers are probably the biggest thing we can look at.
Yeah, it's interesting. I would say, obviously, the turnovers for the BYU side, and we'll get into that here in a bit. But I'd also have to say the penalties on both sides of the ball.
For sure.
That kind of surprised me. Granted, BYU was quite a bit worse on that side of things. But there were times, too, where Utah were nipped by that same penalty bug. But
yeah, I think by the end of the game, penalty yardage was within a yard. But I feel like BYU's moments for their penalties were a lot worse than Utah's.
Oh, yeah. Incredibly bad timing. You know, you look at that one where I think, what was it, 3rd and 27 or something?
Third and a mile.
And you should have been able to put all your safeties, everybody's heels, you know, 20 yards back, let them throw the ball 10 yards and tackle, but then you get two costly penalties in a row like that. And yeah, you just can't do that. It was interesting. I was chatting with you during the game a little bit, back and forth on text and Twitter and stuff. Do you think, and I'm going to repeat your question kind of back to you, and we can talk about it maybe. Do you think the turnovers was Utah kind of leading BYU into those, or was it Utah shooting themselves in the foot, as Bushman said in his interview after the game?
Well, turnovers in general are often viewed as a brain fart or an offensive liability. I often think defenses don't get enough credit for the turnovers they force. But if Zach Wilson doesn't throw those throws, there's nothing Utah can do about it. He can't intercept throws he doesn't throw. I feel like as I watched that game, Utah's defense just doesn't give anything up. You don't get any big plays a lot. You don't get anything easy. So after a while, if you're having to work hard for everything, you start to force the issue. And I think that's what, then when the turnovers come is when they started to try to force the issue. They got impatient and tried to force the issue, and Utah took advantage.
Yeah. It's a little bit of that desperation feel. You're trying to force something, trying to make something happen.
And agreed.
You know, on the BYU side, you got to give Utah that credit. You know, there's been a lot of different rhetoric of that, luckily, you know, people not being blind, saying like, hey, Utah's got a good defense, and it takes a good defense to force those turnovers. And 9 turnovers in 9 games, 6 or 7 of them going for touchdowns instantly without the offense having to even touch the field, you got to give some credit to the defensive coordinators for making game plans that mess with the quarterback's mind or put them in a situation where they have to force the issue or feel like they have to force the issue. And there's a difference between forced turnovers, I think, and errored turnovers. And I think there was a little bit of both in that game. You know, there was a couple for the example of the fumble, you know.
Not forced.
Exactly. Exactly. That was a bad exchange. They were on two different pages, whatever it was. Not forced. But then those two different throws. One of them was great play on the defensive line, forcing Wilson to step up, not realizing that he was getting rushed quite so fast, you know, falling down, still tries to force the throw. Great job on the defense. The other one, also great job on the defense, I think, realizing Wilson never came off his first check down. You know, he was on his first route the entire time, never looked away, and the defense noticed that and jumped on it. So a little bit of both on that one.
And I think it's 23-6 at that point. I feel like if we're going to talk about a little bit of desperation, that felt a little desperate to me. He held the ball. He stared the receiver down. He tried to make a big play in a place that there probably wasn't a big play to be had.
Yeah. There's tight windows, and then there's no windows when there's three people in in defense there.
That one was almost picked twice. So
right. Yeah, and there was another one that should have been picked that was just straight up dropped later on. That's true. Okay, let me ask you. Was it just me, or was that just a kind of a weird feeling game?
I felt weird for most of it. I'm not, you know, we'll get into Utah's offense a little more here later, but it just kind of felt like a wait and see, like what's going to happen next? Is anything going to happen next? The whole first half just kind of felt like they're measuring each other out.
Yeah. There wasn't any like huge plays, granted, besides maybe pick six, but offensively speaking, not a lot of huge plays, just a little bit of back and forth cat and mouse game a little bit, and maybe the weather delay, maybe that was part of it too. It just kind of felt like a weird game.
You got the weather delay, you got a missed PAT, you got a bunch of weird things that you don't see very often.
Yeah. One, Utah just straight up controlling the ball the second half. They had third quarter, they had the ball 12 and a half minutes of the 15. And then I think 10 or 11 minutes of the fourth. It was an insane amount of time that they held the ball, which meant there was some penalties too. You know, there were some things happening where they'd get the first down, bring it back a little bit, get that first down. You can't just hold on to the ball for 9 minutes and not score. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So a little bit of back and forth just felt weird.
I think as a BYU fan, it's probably got to feel weird to watch a whole entire half of football where your offense has the ball for not only that short amount of time, but a couple of the times when you have the ball, it's either a three and out or a pick six on the first play. So I feel like your offense never saw the field in the whole entire half.
No. And if you think about commercial stoppage, the halftime, the weather delay, the offense literally sat on their butts for probably 2 out of the 3 hours of the second half. You know? To some degree, and again, Utah, well-deserved. They do it against not just BYU, but they create turnovers everywhere they go. They're very good at it, so not to downplay that. But to some degree, I wonder how much that played into it. How much played into they were sitting around for so long, and then they go in and make quick mental mistakes, you know, fumble, forced pass, what have you. How much of it was just, hey, I haven't been on, I'm cold, and it's like starting the game over again as an offensive player.
And if you haven't been on the field for that long, you want to go out and make a play. You want to go out and do something real quick, get yourself back in a rhythm, and that causes you to force the issue. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Now, one thing along those same lines, I got to give some credit, even though the score doesn't show it, I got to give some credit to the BYU defense for being out on the field for that long and up against a behemoth of a man, Zach Moss. He is a legit player, and any fan, no matter who you're cheering for, that sees Zach Moss run the way he did when he was healthy on Thursday night, he's got to be impressed. You know, 29 carries, 187 yards, one touchdown. He kind of just put the team on his back that second half and it was impressive. I love it. Rolling Stone gathers no moss. And that was so true.
So my question to you as a BYU fan that felt like, from my perspective, that the defensive game plan was to give up no big plays and make Utah put together chunk drives to score touchdowns. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, yes, I would agree with that. Because of the 3-4 defense, it'll be interesting to see if they do that same 3-4 defense against other teams, which means they're designing it more with personnel. Or was it, like you said, are they trying to keep everything in front of them and just say, okay, we're going to come tackle you guys after 3 or 5 yards of gain, and we're going to try and get you on third down?
Because again, it felt like they were dropping 8 a lot, and maybe not always 8, but it felt like they were only rushing 3 down linemen. And Utah just said, if you're going to put 3 down linemen here the whole game, we're just going to keep running it at you. And I feel like that's just, no one adjusted to that. It just kept going downhill, run. BYU kept dropping 8, and it just kept going.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's no disrespect to Huntley, even though he calls me poo-poo. he kind of had a quiet night. I mean, granted, he still was 13 of 16, 100 yards, which is nothing, you know, to golf at. But he kind of had a quiet night. So you just got to feel that they still dropped 8 just to keep everything in front of them and not give up the home run bomb, you know?
Yeah, it felt like they said, if you're going to score on us, it's going to have to be a 10-play drive. We're not going to give up anything deep. We're not going to give up anything, you know, 40, 50-yard chunks at a time. You're going to have to go 8 to 10 plays and do it that way. And I think Utah showed they were up for the challenge.
Yes, exactly. And that's exactly what Utah did. So, hey, with that, let's move on to segment one. You ready for that?
Let's do it.
All right, goggles on, goggles off. This week's questions. We've got, first up, what would you like to see improved or changed in week 2?
So I'll go first on that one. From a Ute perspective, what I'd like to see changed in week 2 is a little more balance on offense. Like we've discussed, I'm not sure how much of the throw game or the issues with throwing had to do with BYU's defense and what they were doing or what, but I would like to see it somewhere a little closer to 50-50. And I think Whittingham said the same thing in his press conference this week, is to see somewhere closer to 50-50 run and pass.
So was that on purpose, or was that because of what was given to him after seeing one half of play?
I'm gonna go red goggles on and say that Utah felt like they were bigger, faster, and stronger, and they have a new offensive coordinator, and they got Pac-12 play coming up. And red goggles say that they wanted to show 10-20% of their playbook, and they felt like they could beat BYU doing that, and that's what it was. So that's red goggles.
Okay, excellent. Blue goggles on. Things I like to see improved. Tyson Williams. Granted, also on a press conference from Grimes, offensive coordinator for BYU, he said the game plan was to feed him the ball quite a bit more than they did. But the quick drives, the turnovers, and then just the lack of having the ball the second half made it so they couldn't give him the ball. And then once they had the ball back finally the second half, they kind of forced the issue. They had to try and score quick, which means throwing. So hopefully this week against Tennessee in Tennessee, we'll get to see him run the ball a lot. He has played there before. He kind of knows the terrain. And hopefully he's hungry to show SEC what BYU is all about.
I gotcha. I agree with that.
Okay. All right. Next question. Thing we are most surprised about, good or bad, after week one? Red goggles on, Mr. Brown.
Red goggles on. I think I am most excited about has to be the play of the Utah linebackers. As far as the defense goes, we have returners in almost every position. The one place we had lost all our productivity and probably our some of our best linebackers in school history were at the linebacker spot. So we had two new starters. Francis had his chance in the past, you know, as a backup, but he had never been a full-time starter. And so I was excited to see what they had to do. I was excited to see Bernard get that pick six. I was excited to see him get a couple tackles for loss. I was excited to see that they weren't a weak spot of the Utah defense, that they couldn't be picked on.
I sure miss Bernard. I wish we still had him.
Yeah, I can see that.
He would have been a great one after Talkie Talkie put in the middle of the field. But I digress because he is no longer here. So blue goggles on. I'll stay on that same side of the ball, actually. I think the biggest question mark for me personally going into the season for BYU was the defense. There's a lot of people leaving. Talkie Talkie, Kafusi, and kind of just the ends of the defense in general. And I was okay with what I saw. Yes, the score might not show it. Also, 20 points of the 30 were handed, you know, not handed, but, you know, were given up.
Not earned by the offense.
Yes. So I would say the defense. I was surprised by what I saw. Even after giving up that many yards to Moss, I think Moss is a beast. I think that's going to be the best running back they will see all year, which is great because now they're going to go in and they're going to see some SEC running backs and they're like, oh, you know what? I've seen this already. I know.
Yeah, you're going to fight. No argument here.
Yeah. So I was surprised, blue goggles on, by the defense, and it kind of gave me some relief. Like, hey, you know what? I think we'll be okay.
Okay.
All right, buddy. Last questions. Got those goggles?
I'm ready.
All right. Game most excited for outside of BYU and Utah for this coming week?
Red goggles on. Because I have my red goggles on, I'm most excited to watch Stanford and USC.
Understand
that. Because that is a big Pac-12 game. I'm excited to see which two teams that got wins, what they actually look like. Stanford lost their starting quarterback against Northwestern, and I'm not sure how good Northwestern is, so I'm excited to see what they turn into. USC pulled it out against Fresno State last week, but they lost their starting quarterback in the process of that as well. So I'm excited to see what offense they put on the field. So I'm excited to see where Utah stacks up.
Excellent. Yeah, it'll be interesting, too, on the Cougar side, because we do see USC the week after Tennessee. So that could be interesting. But for sake of keeping it different from my Ute friend here, I'm going to go LSU versus Texas. Just because I guess the BYU link is we've got a few wins on Texas while they were down. And even when they weren't down, you know, they did okay that one season. So LSU versus Texas, I think it's going to be the game of the week. I am excited to see if Texas is legitimately back like everyone's saying.
For sure. Yeah, that should be a fun one. You don't often get two top 10 teams this early in the season. Who knows where they'll end up as the year goes along, but currently ranked top 10. So it'll be fun.
Awesome. All right. That's it for Goggles On, Goggles Off. You ready to move on?
Let's do it.
All right, brother. Segment two, highlights of the week. So, for this segment, let's go through some of the best plays of the game. Starting on the Utah side, Andrew Brown, what are the best plays of the game for Utah?
Well, we've already kind of discussed the first one I want to talk about, but it's Francis Bernard's pick six. I think it was a huge momentum changer. At that point, Utah's offense really hadn't done much as far as move the football goes. And BYU had moved the ball. While they only had 3 points at that point, they looked like they were moving the ball much more easy than Utah's offense was. And while Bernard made a great play and a great catch, the part that's not often talked about is Bradley and I's effort on that play. He gets blocked in behind Wilson, continues to make the push, and ends up getting his feet as he's thrown, which I think ended up causing the pick. So that was one of my favorite plays of the game.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Definitely took him off balance. I don't think he felt that one coming.
No.
I would have to say, just because it gives me hope for future games, is that scramble by Wilson. Went around on the right side. Everybody seemed to clear out following the receivers, and he noticed. And, you know, as quarterbacks do, pointed down the field like he's going to just bomb it, even though he's a couple yards past the line of scrimmage, then he takes off. And, you know, it's so interesting because he's so lanky. He almost looks like he's jogging, but he's picking up, you know, 2-3 yards every stride. And so I think it was a 26-yard scramble on that side of the ball. And one reason that makes me hopeful, after doing some research and watching some of the Tennessee game, they seem to kind of mishandled the quarterback run and scrambling in that game. So if Wilson can keep his head on his shoulders, like I know he can, and he notices everybody's clearing out and he takes off running, I think he could have a pretty good rushing yard game.
Yeah, there were multiple times in that game where I thought we had Wilson corralled in the pocket and finds a way to get out. He's pretty slippery. He's pretty exciting. I think, like you said, some of the highlights I saw of the Tennessee game seemed like they had a problem with that. So he might be able to run a little wild on Saturday.
And hopefully the coaches just let him. Hopefully they say, hey, pin your ears back and let's go have some fun.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So we got plays of the week. Let's do players of the week. Let's start off with the BYU side. For the BYU side, my shout out, my player of the week is going to go to Deion Lake. I totally said that wrong. Deion Lake. You know, he wasn't necessarily the number one guy on leading in tackles or what have you. He had 4 tackles, 3 solo, 1 for a loss. But the one thing that I noticed was it seemed like he was always around the ball. He was flying around. He was getting there. He was getting places. And he made several open field tackles that were impressive, even against Covey on that one punt return. You know, Covey's very quick, very shifty, and he stayed right with him. I don't know if that was because of his athletic ability or if he just simply did some homework and knew that was one of his moves. Either way, made a great play. So my guy's going to be Deion Lake. I don't know why I keep saying Lake.
Deion Lake. I thought BYU in general did a pretty good job on open field tackling. He had a couple, so yeah, that was awesome. On Utah's side, it's no brainer. Nowhere else to go with the player of the week except for Zach Moss. 29 carries, 187 yards, only the 1 touchdown, but he's basically what made Utah's offense go. Time after time after time after time, ball after ball after ball, picking up 5, 6, 7 yards a carry. And that's with getting hit 1 yard in. I think his yards after contact was over 100 yards for sure.
Oh, yeah. He is a beast. And I'm going to use my my little Rolling Stone gathers no moss all season long.
I think my favorite play for him of the game was when BYU had Utah pinned back inside their 5.
Mm-hmm.
And they run that play out to the right. And BYU has a linebacker or somebody get through right away and catch him at the goal line. And it looks like it's going to be a safety. Oh. He somehow lands on 1 foot and turns it outside and turns it into a 15-yard gain. And I was just like, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, he is on another level. I think, was he like doing the splits or whatever? I don't know how he's on his feet.
He's like off balance in the air because he got hit in the hip. And he lands on 1 foot, regathers himself, breaks another tackle, gets to the outside, and gets a first down. So it was just...
Any other human being, that was a safety.
Yeah, I was like, that was a big play for sure.
Very impressive. Very impressive. It'll be fun to watch him on Sundays in a year.
Yes.
All right. So that was the end of segment 2, highlights of the week. We're going to move on to segment 3. Before we start there, we're going to do a little shout out to our sponsor.
I'll tell you no matter.
All right. Welcome back. Segment three, we're going to go over other games around the nation, scores, highlights, and player of the week. So, Andrew Brown, lead us off, buddy. What are some of the scores and highlights you'd like to talk about from other games around the nation?
Oh, man, the one that hurts the most with Utah in mind and with the Pac-12 in general is Oregon finding a way to lose that one to Auburn right at the end there. I'll tip my cap to Auburn and that freshman quarterback and the way he played in the second half, but Oregon was a better football team for probably three quarters of that game and just couldn't take advantage.
Yeah. I'll tell you, as a spectator, it was sure fun to watch. That was
agreed.
A great game.
Great. Lots of offense, not a whole lot of scoring, a lot of breakdown in the red zone, but it was fun to watch those athletes. There's athletes all over the floor, all over the field on both sides.
Definitely. And seemed like just like almost every other game that we watched this this past weekend, first week, lots of mental errors. There was a few different times where there was delay of game penalties or they had to call timeouts to avoid those. But I guess that's what you expect on week one, you know. Week three, four, and five and beyond, that should be minimal. If you see that, that's not a good sign on the coaching, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
But, yeah, Nick's last second throw, pretty fun to watch. We'll see how he goes. We'll see if he's a Tanner Mangum and puts a couple of those together or if he's going to be the real deal and make seasons out of it and see him on Sundays.
Yeah, what about you, Chase? What was the game that you were most excited to watch this weekend?
You know, I actually really enjoyed watching the Notre Dame, Louisville game last night, Monday night. So the reason I kind of enjoyed that, I'm not a huge Notre Dame fan, but, with them winning, it's kind of a bummer, but the way that Louisville hung with them, especially that first half, those first three quarters, after losing, I think it was five in a row to end last season, and they were just, you know, heads down. They didn't seem like they were going to go anywhere. And then a new coach shows up and brings some new swagger. I loved seeing how small their defense was, but it didn't stop them. They were flying through gaps. They were cutting those defenders down and then getting to the ball. They were flying around. It was fun to watch. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the more fun things about college football is the fact that a 2-10 Louisville team last year, if that's the NFL, you pretty much know what you're going to expect. They're not going to get much better after 1 year. But in college football, a 2-10 team, and you never know what they're going to be the next year. So it was fun to see. I know they might end up being 2-10 again, but they look like a much more improved, well-coached team this year.
Amen to that. You know, another 2-10 team that showed up last week?
Who's that?
Georgia State over Tennessee. Oh, man. I don't know, Andrew, if that's a good thing or not, though, because now I think Tennessee is ticked off, and who's next? BYU.
I was going to say, you took the question right out of my mouth. Is that as a BYU fan, are you happy about that or sad about that?
Oh, man, it makes me nervous, really. It does, because if they had, even if it was a close one and Tennessee still won, and if it was still an ugly win, they wouldn't have their ears pinned back so much. Now their fans are booing them. You know, their grandmas are disowning them. You know, all the they're going to be ticked. And if BYU doesn't show up, they're just going to be kind of a punching bag. But they also laid the groundwork on how to beat a Tennessee team. Just like the only way BYU could have really beat Utah, control the turnover game, control the run and control the time, right? Who has the ball the longest? And that's how you beat teams you're not supposed to beat and not give the ball up when that deficit. So I think they just laid that groundwork.
I have two thoughts. Because the first thing that went to my head too is, oh man, they're going to get a focused Tennessee team now who might have been overlooking the first couple games of the year.
Mm-hmm.
That was my original thought. But my second thought is, I mean, how good can they be if they lost to Georgia State? Like, they might be a little more focused and they might be, a little more hungry, but I'm not sure how good of a football team they are.
Yeah. Well, and you got to believe that BYU has bigger offensive linemen, bigger, faster defense. They just got to be more physical and better, you would hope, talent-wise, than Georgia State. So we'll see.
I just looked it up. Lions at minus Tennessee's a 3.5 point favorite, which feels probably just about right. Would you agree?
I did hear that. I feel cheated, honestly. Like,
Yeah.
I know they're SEC. I know they're big time, but you got to look at what they did last season and who they just lost to. It's got to count for something.
So yeah. So don't quote me on this, but I've heard things before that says the home team automatically gets 3 points. So if you believe that to be true, that almost feels like a push, right? Which would be about, it seems fair to me.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't know that. So that would make sense. So they're just saying, hey, it's a tie. It's a toss-up.
it's a toss-up, and the home team's going to get, the home team gets the advantage because they're at home.
Okay. Now, if you're looking at it that way, I'll buy that. It just gives me more hope that Tennessee is beatable.
Agreed. I think they're very beatable.
Who are some of your key players you wanted to talk about?
Oh, man. Watching the parts of the Clemson game I did, Trevor Lawrence is a stud and is going to get all the love this year and is probably, if all things considered, going to be the first overall pick when he goes out.
It's just the hair. It's all about the hair.
It's the hair and the arm and the hair and the arm. But what made that team go and what I think is going to make that team go all season is Travis Etienne. He had 12 carries for 205 yards.
What?
And 3 touchdowns. Which just feels ridiculous with that amount of work.
12 carries and how many yards?
205.
Good night.
That's insane. Yeah. So yeah, he's my stud of the week.
Okay. On my side, I'm going to go with a little bit of an underdog. Cool story floating around out there. Nevada kicker Brandon Talton goes out there, nails the game-winning field goal, no time remaining against Purdue. They weren't supposed to beat them. Obviously, they did. Gets the game ball and a scholarship at the end of the game from his coach. Awesome video. If you've got a second, go out there and look it up and find it. It's very, very cool.
A little more insight on that one. My family, or my wife's family, is actually from Reno, the Reno area. So they got a little insider info that says the kid didn't even know he was going to start until about 30 minutes before the game.
No kidding?
Walk on, kicks the game winner, and gets a scholarship. So that's just an awesome story.
And he didn't even know he was going to be starting.
Yeah.
Man, that is cool. Good for him. And that's one of those things you just love about college football.
Agreed. Hold on, one last thing before we change subjects here. I want your thoughts on the all-powerful SEC conference losing to teams like Wyoming, Memphis, and Georgia State, and UNC.
Yes, sir. The Power Fives that be, right?
I read all over the place how poor the Pac-12 is and has been for the last 3 years. I know for a fact if the Pac-12 loses to those four teams on a week that they're done for. But I don't hear much of it talked about it as far as SEC people go.
Right? Yeah, it's kind of hush-hush. Nobody's wanting to talk about that. It's interesting to me, these Power Five teams or groups, it seems to be leveling out to some degree. You take Georgia and Alabama out of the SEC, maybe even LSU, and you take Clemson out of the AAC, right?
Yeah.
And then what do you have? It's really a toss-up. Like, anybody could go to the playoffs any given year outside of those few teams. And it's kind of exciting. As a college football fan, that makes me really excited, because now I'm wanting and even more willing to go out and watch some of these games, because I'm like, man, who is going to win? I have no idea. It could be a MAC team beating the SEC team. What? That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It shows the parity in college football outside of maybe, like you mentioned, the top 4 or 5 teams, which, Alabama, Clemson, those kind of teams. But everywhere else, it seems like there's week in, week out, anybody can beat anybody.
Yeah. It's a nice leveling, it seems like, which could play into the hands of Utah.
For sure.
Like, I think that helps him personally.
Yeah. The more we look at this, the more we're saying, you know, no one cares that the bottom of the SEC lost to those teams, because the top of your conference shows how good your conference is. And until the Pac-12 can go beat one of those top SEC or top Big 12 or top Big 10 teams, it's going to continue to be picked on. So that's why that Oregon loss hurt so bad.
Fair enough. Okay. All right. Moving on to segment 4, this week's game. So, this week we've got BYU at Tennessee and Utah at Northern Illinois. Is that correct?
They're hosting Northern Illinois.
Okay, hosting Northern Illinois in Utah. So, Mr. Brown, what are some keys to winning for Utah? What's your prediction?
Okay, so we went to Northern Illinois last year, and it was a much closer game than many Utah fans predicted and many Utah fans were comfortable with. In fact, I think Northern Illinois had the ball with a chance to go take the lead and ended up throwing a pick six. Chase Hansen with a big pick ended up sealing it. But it was up in doubt up until the very end.
Was it early in the season?
Yeah, week two again, I think, last year. Week two, week three, early. So, okay. So I don't expect that to be the case this year. I think Northern Illinois lost the quarterback he faced last year. They did pick up a win this week against Illinois State, which I'm not, you know, I don't know much about Illinois State, I'm going to be honest with you. But it was 24-10. They seemed to be pretty balanced on offense, but they did give up 2 sacks and 7 tackles for a loss to an Illinois State defense, which I think Utah might be a step or two up. So I'm excited to see that Utah defensive line get after his quarterback and wreck some havoc back there.
Right, and it's not a sleeper this year.
Yeah, for sure. Utah, they should have Utah's attention, and Utah should be hopefully getting ready to go into Pac-12 play and not, you know, sleeping right now.
Excellent. No, very good. What's your prediction then on your score?
I'm going to go 31-10. I'm going to go late touchdown for Northern Illinois, but I feel like Utah should be in complete control, and I'm hoping to see some more passing yards, over 200 hopefully.
All right. Okay, on the BYU side, as we talked a little bit about earlier, BYU is facing a very potentially angry Tennessee team in Tennessee. They're expected to be in front of 106,000 people. And I think last I'd heard, they're supposed to be about 10, they're thinking maybe even 15,000 BYU fans. That number might go up after last week's loss for Tennessee. Sounds like there's a lot of fans trying to sell their tickets now. So we'll see how that goes. But that would be pretty cool to see some blue floating around the stadium. Going over keys to winning, I think, like I said earlier, we got to feed the running backs, get that running game established. After looking through some of the stats, Georgia State racked up over 200 yards rushing along with 100 yards throwing. I think that's got to be somewhat of the ratio that BYU looks at as well. We're going to need to have probably 2/3 rushing to the 1/3 throwing, even though it'd be awesome for Wilson just to go crazy. SEC still has that speed, you know. So if we get a few under, 10, 15 yard passes, maybe a couple 20 yard passes, I doubt to see huge home run balls, but keeping it nice and quick. Nice check downs, boom, 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 real nice quick passes for him, and then keeping that run game going. So I think that's going to be some of the keys for them to win. And then turnovers, and hold on to that stinking ball, right? That's got to be the keys.
That's from BYU perspective. I think we're going to need to just a little bit more out of BYU's receivers this next week too. Help Wilson out a little more, give him another option to throw to outside of Bushman.
Yeah. Yeah, and someone made an excellent point. These receivers, they're good, right? They're good guys. They're good receivers, but they're not crazy fast, and they're not, like, crazy tall or anything like that. And so when they do get these passes thrown their way and they're catchable balls, they've got to make that catch. There was one in particular where it would have been a first down for us, and I think Shumway dropped it. These guys, they've got to be solid. Just like, you know, your KL Louis and, you know, Cody Hoffman's. It wasn't like they were necessarily the biggest, fastest guys, but every time the ball's around, they're going to make that catch. We need that.
For sure.
So my prediction this week, I'm hesitantly going to put BYU up 30-21. I'm going to say they go in and get the job done in Tennessee.
That'd be awesome.
Wouldn't it? That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then they can come into Provo. Everybody's, you know, emotion and energy's all back up and ready to rock and roll for USC. That would be super ideal.
Okay.
All right, buddy. All right. Moving on to the last segment. Final rant. Mr. Brown, you've got the floor, you got the stage, let us have it. Mr. Utah, what's your final rant?
Okay, my final rant, I'm going to change it up a little bit here, actually. And I am going to say, and this is going to surprise people as the Utah side of this podcast, my final rant has to do with Zach Wilson and the BYU fan base giving that kid a chance. Unfortunately, I've learned over the years that it feels like a lot of BYU fans' favorite player is the backup quarterback. Whoever's playing the backup quarterback, that's who they want, and that's the fan favorite. And I already saw a couple Twitter posts about, let's give Jaren Hall a chance. And it just drives me crazy. That kid, you know, played against a tough defense, made some mistakes, but let's not quit him after game one. He's talented. He makes smart decisions for the most part, and just, you know, let's give him a chance.
Okay. Hey, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, we do have a history of going to number two, right? But, you know, think of Riley Nelson. Everybody was hot on Jacob Heaps. And
I was going to say, yeah, go. I remember it was Jake Heaps. Everybody thought Jake Heaps was the second coming of Steve Young, and then he struggled. He struggled a couple games, and the fan base wanted Riley Nelson. And then Riley Nelson started playing, and then they wanted – who was next? They wanted Tanner. And then they had Tanner, and they wanted somebody else. And I was like, man, give him a chance.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jake Heaps, I should say, all other games excluded, just the Utah game, that was a hard one to watch.
I was in the stadium for that one. That's one of my favorite BYU-Utah memories right there.
Oh, man. Just I was watching that game. I can't remember where, but watching it on TV. And when he tried to pick it up and throw it and just had nothing in his hand, I was just flabbergasted. I just stood there in silence. I was like, what just happened?
Yeah.
But, hey, no, that's a fair rant. I can respect that rant. So, BYU side, final rant, I'd have to say heads up. You know, let's keep our chins up, keep rolling. We've got another game in front of us. It's super hard to lose to Utah, but it would be even harder if we put four losses in a row. So we've got to move past it quick, get ready to get it back up on our feet, go to Tennessee, get the job done, and come back to Provo with an energy and excitement for the team, for the fans, and everything that gives them another shot at a Pac-12 team that's a very good, reputable name in USC. So that's my rant. Hey, brother, I think that's all the time we've got. It's been fun. I hate losing to Utah, but like we've said before, it's good having some level-headed guys being able to talk about it, both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I love the conversation, Chase, so I appreciate it, and let's talk again next week.
All right. Hey, everybody, thanks for tuning in. Like I said, we're going to do these once a week. We set up an Instagram and a Twitter account, Brothers of the Holy War, or Bros of the Holy War, I should say. So go find us on Twitter and Instagram. And thanks again. Shout out to our sponsor, Anchor. You guys have been awesome. And you know what? let's go get them, Andrew. Let's have a good weekend.
Okay. Go Utes. Go Cougs.
All right. Thanks, buddy. We'll see you next week.
Talk to you later.